Big 2019 at the Brisbane Convention and Exhibition Centre. We don't often get to sit down and have a fireside chat with one of our exhibitors, but we're able to do that now because we have Charity Davies from the from Grosvenor Public Sector Advisory, an associate director. This is a great forum for you guys to give out your message. So how important is something like this for you?
Oh, look, this is really important. Being here today is a great way to get across what's happening in the public sector in Queensland. It's something that we're very passionate about. Today we are talking mostly about the future of work and the impact of the future of work, particularly on the public sector.
How big an issue is the future of work in your area?
You know, we hear a lot about the future of work, and future of work was relevant 100 years ago. It'll be relevant in 100 years' time. It's relevant now, but we don't really see it as an issue. We see it as an opportunity. So at the moment, there's a big groundswell of concern around take-up of technology and the impact technology is going to have on the way we work in the future. But our message today is there's a whole range of factors that need to be considered in preparing for the future of work, and there's some myths there that need to be dispelled or busted a little bit as well around the future of work.
Let's have a look at those then. What are they?
So if we look at technology as the first one, you will hear a lot of studies or research or academic papers talking about how technology is going to change at such a rate that the majority of jobs we're doing today won't exist in the future. And whilst if we rested on our laurels and did absolutely nothing, that would be true, what we do know is as humans, we're very adaptable and we actually don't rest on our laurels. We do adapt as technology is enabled. So, for example, if you look at something like business communications and what's happened in that space in the last 100 years, you know, 100 years ago in the last century, all of our meetings were face-to-face, correspondence was via paper mail, then we had the telegram, then we had the telephone, then we had pages, then we had satellite, then we had the fax machine. Then now we've moved on to social media, mobile phones, video links, Skype interviews. So, and that hasn't, you know, our transformation from face-to-face, paper-based communications to where we are now hasn't happened in one great big leap. It's happened as a series of incremental changes over that time. So just like in 100 years' time, people will look back now and say, wow, in 80 years they went from horse and cart to driverless solar-powered cars. Isn't that incredible? The reality is you're not doing that in one big leap. You're doing it as a series of incremental changes. And so our message is really about how do you manage those changes? How do you get your workforce ready to be have the aptitudes to be prepared to shift with the technology?
When you think about all that technology and when you've encapsulated that beautifully, the end result is our communication can be a lot more effective and quicker.
That's right. So, you know, what we're seeing in the future of workspace is it is about productivity. So we're looking for productivity gains, which is the efficiency and the effectiveness piece. So being efficient is great, but it's not much use to you unless you're also being effective. So some of the other challenges that we're hearing in the future of workspace that we know organisations are concerned about are things like shifting to new ways of working and being more agile, responsive, flexible. And our message there is, as humans, we already do that. And yes, we've got some training or some capability uplift that we can do with our workforces, but you only have to look at big mammoth projects like the Trans-Siberian Railway, which was actually done in an agile sprint way. They built 11 pieces of that railway concurrently in separate parts of the continent, and they all married up in the end, and they did it in sprints. So Our shifting to new ways of working is really just about mindset and how we manage the workforce through that transition and how we build a culture around active development and being learning organisations.
You talk about the workforce, so the organisation around that has to be able to move and adapt quickly just as much as the workforce needs to.
That's absolutely right. And so a lot of that comes down to how we think about jobs and how we design jobs. So job design is another thing that people get very nervous and concerned about when they think about the future of work. And that's because when we first started job design, we were looking at scientific methods, or Taylorism was the approach that was used way back in the day, where we were looking at designing jobs so that we could predict a standard, repeatable outcome every time. Particularly important in times of, you know, mass munitions factories or the rise of quality assurance and quality control. But we know now as humans that that's in fact not how we work. So we've seen job design go through a series of phases over the years. We moved to models where we were looking at, we developed a fascination of grouping functions and designing organisations around the groups of functions, which is where much of our public sector still sits today. But what we're seeing with the future of work is those organisations that understand the aptitudes of their people and build the work around the aptitudes of the individuals they have tend to fare much better. So job design will change, the inputs we use for job design will change, but the result will be the same. We'll be looking at developing jobs that meet the organisation need and that we have ways of getting the right people into those roles based on their strengths, their aptitudes, their character traits.
Well, that provides other challenges.
It does provide other challenges because the way we're structured at the moment, particularly in the public sector, is around some traditional modes of job design and traditional org structures, so around job families or classification structures. And when we start talking about capabilities and aptitudes and proficiency levels, it's a slightly different way of looking at these things. So there are some challenges there, but they're not insurmountable.
What can we or should an organisation do as a first step in negotiating the rapids of change?
I think, if you were to look at any one of these things, the job design problem, the shift to new ways of working, the technology thing, if you were to look at that and try and address that and answer the question, what is this going to do to us in the future, that becomes a very complex beast to try to have to tackle to the ground. Instead, we find the biggest challenge organisations have is knowing where to start on this journey and coming up with a very deliberate, clear pathway on how to progress their thinking around moving to a situation where they've got the workforce prepared for changes in the roles as technology arises, as new job design techniques come on board, as new ways of working and new processes come online. So we strongly advocate for people to have a look at our Future of Work pack and preparing the work for the workforce of the future. We've got a number of tools and case studies on our website. We encourage people to go on and download those. They're free. We also have a community of practice around Future of Work, and our focus is very much at that pragmatic level. What are the things you can do at a very pragmatic sort of level to start preparing your team, your unit, your branch, your section, your whole organisation on this pathway towards future success?
You know how they say a painter can have the worst house in the street. There's somebody involved in your sector. How do you implement the changes that you espouse on your home front?
Yeah, it's really interesting that you say that, because only in the last few years we've realised in our own organisation that we had quite a traditional way of job design. And that's back in that sort of Taylorism, standardised approach to how you manage a client or how you build community engagement or how you tender for a piece of work and win a job. What we're seeing now is our organisation's grown quite a lot in the last few years, and we're seeing that the people that are coming in, we're able to leverage that whole person. So not just how good they are at consulting practice, but what about all of the jobs they've done before? We've got people in our organisation that have doctorate degrees. We have people who have grown up in the country. We've got people who have lived overseas, people who have done a lot of community development work. All of those things provide us with a rich tapestry of workforce that we can tap into. So it's about understanding where those capabilities are, what the proficiencies are, and how and when to leverage them. And so I guess one of the reasons we're starting to emerge in the future of workspace in the public sector advisory environment is because we're doing it to ourselves. We've done it to ourselves and we've seen the fruits of our labour as a result.
The future of work is in good hands. So the P's, give us those P's. That is, it's your little What can I say? It's a driving force in what you do.
That's right. So our whole mission in the public sector advisory practice is to build a proud, passionate and purposeful public sector. We are made up of individuals who have worked at very senior levels in the public sector ourselves. So we 100% believe that, you know, some of the best work we've ever seen is done in the public sector. And I think the public sector gets a bad rap a lot of the time. So we're trying to push that message that we actually believe in a proud, passionate and purposeful public sector.
Thank you for being proud, passionate and purposeful, Charity.
Thank you very much, Ian.